Sometimes a person has a great desire to commit suicide, as just one example, and if a person has been penalized life after life for doing that, then frequently they will have a memory of something about self-destruction in the hope that such a memory will cause the body to refrain from self-destruction. I pondered upon all this and then I walked to the window and looked out. Just below there was the fresh green of the swampy area and the beautiful green of the leaves of the willow trees. My guide broke into my reverie. "You like looking out of this window, Lobsang. Does it occur to you that you look out so frequently because you find the green so soothing to your eyes?" As I thought about it, I realized that I did instinctively see green after I had been working at my books. "Green, Lobsang, is the most restful color for the eyes. It gives ease to tired eyes. When you go to the Western world, you will find that in some of their theaters there is a place called the Green Room where actors and actresses go to rest their eyes after having been subjected to smoke-filled stages and bright glaring footlights and floodlights." I opened my eyes in amazement at this, and I decided that I would pursue this matter of colors whenever the opportunity presented itself. My guide said, "I have to leave you now, Lobsang. But tomorrow come to me again because I am going to teach you some other things." He rose to his feet, patted me on the shoulder, and went out. For some time I stood looking out of the window, looking out at the green of the swamp grass and the trees which were so restful to the eyes. Chapter 12. I stood a little way down the path, looking down the mountainside. My heart was sick within me and my eyes were hot with the tears I dare not shed. The old man was being carried down the mountain. The Japanese monk, Kenji Tekaki, had returned to his ancestors. Now the disposers of the dead were carrying his poor shriveled old body away from us. Was his spirit even now wandering on a path lined with cherry blossoms? Or was he seeing the mistakes of his lifetime and planning his return? I looked down again before the men rounded a curve in the path. Looked down at the pathetic bundle that once had been a man. A shadow came over the sun, and for a time I imagined that I saw a face in the clouds. Was it true, I wondered, that there were guardians of the world? Great spirit guardians who saw to it that man had suffering on earth in order to live. Why, they must be like school teachers, I thought. Perhaps Kenji Tekaki would meet them. Perhaps he would be told that he had learned well. I hoped so, for he had been a frail old man who had seen much and suffered much. Or would he have to come down to the flesh again, reincarnate, so that he could learn more? When would he come? In some 600 years, or now? I thought of it, I thought of the service I had just left. The service for guiding the dead. The flickering butter lamps, flickering like the flames of a feeble life. I thought of the clouds of sweet-smelling incense which seemed to form into living creatures. For a moment I had thought Kenji Tekaki had come among us again as a living being instead of propped up before us as a wizened corpse. Now perhaps he would be looking at the Akashic record, that indelible record of all that has ever happened. Maybe he would be able to see where he had gone wrong and remember for when he came again. The old man had taught me a lot. In his strange way he had been fond of me, talking to me as an equal. Now he was no more on the earth. Idly I kicked a stone and scuffed my worn sandals in the ground. Had he a mother? Somehow I could not imagine him as young, as having a family. He must have been lonely, living among us strangers, so far from his own land. So far from the warm breezes and his own sacred mountain. Often he had told me about Japan, and then his voice had grown hoarse and his eyes strange. One day he had shocked me by saying that people probed into occult matters when they would be better off by waiting until they were ready, instead of trying to importune a master. "The master always comes when the student is ready, boy," he said to me, "and when you have a master, do everything he says, for only then are you ready." The day was becoming duller. Clouds were forming overhead and the wind was beginning to whip up small stones again. Below me, in the plain, a small group of men appeared from the base of the mountain. Gently they placed their pathetic bundle on the back of a pony, mounted their own, and slowly rode off. I stared out across the plain, until at last the small cortege vanished from my sight. Slowly I turned away and trudged up the mountain. The end, kindness to publishers department. Throughout the years since the third I first appeared, I have had a tremendous amount of mail, and up to the present I have always answered that mail. Now I have to say that I am no longer able to reply to any mail at all unless adequate return postage is enclosed. So please do not send letters to my publisher for forwarding to me, because one have asked my publisher not to forward any letters. People forget that they pay for a book and not a lifetime of free postpaid advisory service. Publishers are publishers, not a letter forwarding service. I have had letters from all over the world, even from well behind the Iron Curtain, but not one in several thousand people encloses return postage, and the cost is so much that I can no longer undertake replies. People ask such peculiar things too. Here are just some. There was a very desperate letter from Australia which reached me when I was in Ireland. The matter was, apparently, truly urgent, so at my own expense I sent a cable to Australia, and I did not even receive a note of thanks. A certain gentleman in the USA wrote me a letter demanding that I should immediately write a thesis for him and send it by return airmail. He wanted to use it as his thesis to obtain a doctorate in Oriental philosophy. Of course, he did not enclose any postage, it was merely a somewhat threatening demand. An Englishman wrote me a very, very haughty letter in the third person, demanding my credentials. And only if they were completely satisfactory to this person would he consider placing himself under my tuition, provided that there would be no charge for it. In other words, I was supposed to be honored. I do not think he would like my reply. Another one wrote to me and said that if I and my chums would come from Tibet and cluster around his bed in the astral at night, then he would be able to feel more happy about astral traveling. Other people write to me and ask me everything from high esoteric things, which I can answer if I want to how to keep hens and one's husband. People also consider that they should write to me just whenever they think they should, and then they get offensive if I do not reply by return airmail. I will ask you not to bother my publishers. In fact, I have asked them not to send on any letters to me because they are in business as publishers. For those who really do need an answer, although I do not invite letters, I have an accommodation address. It is Dr. T. Lobsang Rampa, BM, TLR, London WCI, England. I do not guarantee any reply, and if you use this address you will have to provide very adequate postage, because the letters will be forwarded to me and I shall have to pay, so I shall not be in a sweet enough mood to reply unless you have made my expense your expense. For example, it will cost me a dollar at least by the time forwarding charges are paid.